Welcome back to the Book of Proverbs, everyone. Chapter 22 today, as we dive into issues of justice and equity, along with some essential verses for raising children. As usual, the topics and themes in Proverbs bounce around much the same way that daily life does. I'm joined today by two of our illustrious Through the Word teachers. Chase Acuna and Peyton Jones are here. Chase, you have the honor of the first proverb.
All right. Thanks, Chris. So I'm going to be reading Proverbs 22:2. It says, "Rich and poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. Rich, poor, male, female, black, white, and the various shades of color in between, the Bible makes it clear that the Lord is the maker of them all. All of humanity has been made in his image, which means all carry inherent dignity. All are equal in value. All are dependent upon our Creator for life. And all have sinned and are in need of his redeeming grace and rescue." Now, I wonder how different a culture or society might look if it lived in the reality of these things. Or how different one's own life would look if they began seeing oneself and others the way that God does in these matters. My guess is it would change a lot for a lot of us and be transformative to our cultures and societies.
You know, it's amazing to me how much our perspective on others and on ourselves is affected by simply remembering our Maker and remembering that our Maker is the same as their Maker. Who am I to judge his creation, his servant? Now, I'm going to move us to verse 6 and perhaps the classic verse about raising children. And I'm going to read this one from the ESV. "Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it." Now, train is a great word for raising kids. The NIV has changed it to start children off. And I think that's accurate, but I really like the word train. Because preparing for life is a lot like training for a sport or starting a new job. You go through training so you can do it well. It's more than just classroom learning, more than memorizing a set of facts. If you want to compete, you build muscle, you run plays, you develop strategies, you run a scrimmage, you get on the field and you learn by doing. But you do all that with a coach there to train you. And raising kids is training, getting them onto the court and into real life, but with us there as parents to train them for it. As parents, we have a job to give them opportunities to try, to take risks, to fail, to succeed, and to learn and grow from all of it. And for kids of faith, we have to let them flex their faith, to build that faith muscle, to live real life, to reach real people with real ministry. And I also like that it says, train up a child in the way they should go. There's a path we want for them. Not just a set of beliefs and not just a destination, yet we can't take that path for them, nor can we force them along a path. We have to train and prepare them for it. That means giving them opportunities to make decisions and to walk them out so they'll grow instincts for life. We want them to have gut reactions to situations, that have wisdom and faith ingrained in them, an instinct to trust God when it gets hard, to pray when trouble hits. To find good friends, choose the right, measure risks properly, to look for stable footing before placing their weight on a rock. There's so much here in this verse, but I want to keep moving forward. So Peyton, what'd you find in verse 15?
"Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away." You know, part of being a kid is to get it wrong sometimes. Proverbs doesn't see making mistakes as bad, but normal, to be expected. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child. So this isn't about punishment. It's about driving folly away. Discipline is a tool to pry folly out of the heart. One way or another, folly is going to come out of that heart, whether through discipline in a controlled way, or it's going to keep leaking out of the heart all throughout their lives, hemorrhaging out into adulthood like they never grew up. People who have never experienced discipline end up becoming 50-year-old babies who throw tantrums in public and insist on having their own way. Drive that folly out while they're young, Solomon says.
You know, I think it's important to see here that this is not a dig on kids, like they're all good-for-nothing fools and deserve punishment. It's simply a statement of a child's nature. Left to themselves, kids will do very foolish things. It's all bound up in their heart. You gotta love them and help them get it out. And that takes discipline. But discipline is much more than punishment. The goal of parental discipline is to train kids to reach a place of self-discipline. That means we want them to have a control over the self that enables them to resist temptation and choose wisdom and be a functioning adult. Now the two of you each have younger kids than mine. Chase, what are some keys with your kids for driving that folly from their tender little hearts?
I think the key for me when I discipline is to try to do it in a way that lets them know it's not that I'm angry or that I don't love them that I'm doing it. It's the exact opposite. It's because I love them so much and care about who they become that I discipline. It's out of my desire for their greatest good. This work as a father has actually helped me to see and receive God's warning and discipline towards me also a lot differently, knowing it's out of his love for me as his kid.
That's really good. We learn so much about the nature of God's love for us from our experience in disciplining our own children. You know, putting all of this together, the training and the discipline are about aiming for healthy adulthood. One of the great dangers that I've seen in too many Christian homes is an overemphasis on discipline that pushes these verses beyond their intent. When kids are controlled by a fear of punishment, or when parents are harsh, that keeps the child a child and does not train a child for independent adulthood. When parents operate out of a fear of the world, they fail to empower their kids to live holy and godly in the world. I've been working with kids for 25 years, and one rule that I have found essential, especially when your kids become teens, I have to want them to grow up. If they perceive me to be holding them back, treating them like a child, or forcing them along a path, even if it's a good path, they will resist. Alternately, if they know that we are empowering and equipping them for their own path, for their success and their journey, they will trust us. My kids need to know that I am a super fan of their adulthood. One of my life goals is their maturity and their responsible independence. Go, kid, go. Now, we could take a whole series on training and discipline, but Proverbs changes the subject, as it will. Chase, why don't you take us to verse 8?
Proverbs 22:8 says, "Whoever sows injustice reaps calamity, and the rod they wield in fury will be broken." So I don't know much about gardening, but after moving to a place with rich soil and where it rains a lot, my family and I eventually aspire to. Yet in spite of being a novice, it was not long before realizing that if one plants cherry seeds, they won't eventually end up with the lemon tree. Nor will watermelon sprout from a jalapeno plant. Why? Because the fruit that comes up is not based on wishful thinking, but based on the type of seeds that have been sown. Well, similarly, one can't sow injustice time and time again and think that ultimately will turn out good for them. In fact, in the New Testament book of Galatians, Paul uses similar imagery when he says, "If we sow to the flesh, we'll reap from there. But if one sows to the Spirit, then they will also reap from the Spirit." The reality is, when it comes to sowing, sooner or later, the fruit of what we have sown will come to fruition, for better or for worse. And this is sobering. So this proverb warns the reader that the fruit of injustice ultimately brings about calamity, not tangerines or roses.
I love that repetition from the Old Testament to the New, that theme of sowing. You sow seeds, and that forces you to take the long view of life, to have the faith of a farmer, to see that the seeds you sow in life will come back. They will sprout. Now moving ahead, Peyton, take us to verse 28.
"Do not move an ancient boundary stone set up by your ancestors. Is it me, or does there seem to be an extra amount of hubris by the current generation? Don't get me wrong. Every generation thinks they know more than the generation before them. But when you go and remove ancient boundary stones, you're going to cause problems. A boundary stone is a way of defining something, the start of something, and the end of something else, like a boundary or a border between lands. We find our definitions changing in the modern world, and it gets a bit confusing. The more we think we're smarter than the generation before us, the stupider we sound. We shouldn't refuse to change things that need changing from the past, but this proverb is telling us to respect the wisdom of those who went before us and give them a little credit that they may have been operating out of wisdom as well.
And once again, I think a key there is balance. The wise person doesn't reject everything simply because it's old. Neither do they accept everything simply because it's old. But the wise discerns and has respect for their ancestors. Take time to think through, why did they set these boundary zones? Why were these limits set on life? If they were wrong, then reject them. But take time and respect them. Do not move an ancient boundary stone set up by your ancestor. And that's our wisdom for today. Take some time to read Proverbs 22. Maybe have a wisdom discussion with your friends as well. And we'll meet you back in the next chapter.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.